Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a journalist of health, food, and the environment, connecting the dots between our personal well-being and our society and health context. That means the health of our communities, the health of our air, water, earth, food, the health of our society, and the ecological balance of planet Earth. These are not kind of, the environment is not merely something that we find uplifting or that we, go out to enjoy and appreciate to bring calm and centeredness into our lives, so it's certainly that. It's also the context for life itself, both for ourselves and for many other species, all other living species and beings on Earth. So that's what we discuss every week on this program. And every week we talk with different authors, experts, advocates, and thought leaders about all the different facets of what influences or shapes or kind of harms our well-being and what we can do about that. So that's what we talk about every week on the show. Today, I'm very pleased to have someone discussing a very important issue that I've been aware of for a time, but it's one that we've actually never covered on Connect the Dots before, so I know you're going to be very interested to learn more. We're going to be talking about the effects of electromagnetic fields and electromagnetic radiation in our virtual world where, you know, Wi-Fi and EMRs of all different kinds are, you know, in our homes, in our world, and what the health impacts of those are, with medical writer and author Katie Singer, who's written a book called An Electronic Silent Spring. And that title alone should give my environmentally oriented listeners a clue about, the fact that there are some concerns. Katie Singer works on public policy with the Electromagnetic Radiation Policy Institute. She's a medical journalist, and her books include this present book, An Electronic Silent Spring, as well as earlier books, The Garden of Fertility, Honoring Our Cycles, and a novel, The Wholeness of a Broken Heart. And so we'll find out a lot more. She's really delved into this issue very completely. I think it's a really important issue because, it's kind of all around us, but like many things that are all around us, we don't kind of like to think about it, or in many cases, we're just completely not informed about it. So listen up. We're going to learn a lot more today from Katie. Welcome to Connect the Dots, Katie. Happy to have you here.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Good. First off, when we're so kind of pervaded and kind of bathing in Wi-Fi and cell phone towers and all kinds of other things, which I hope you'll kind of, give our listeners an understanding of what some of the concerns are, there's just a natural sense to kind of assume that these things wouldn't be put out there where we and our children and all animal and plant life are exposed to them unless they had been kind of vetted for safety. And so there's an assumption that, we're just free to use these things because, someone must have looked into this and assured that they were safe. Are they safe and have they been properly vetted?
I'm going to go back a ways to answer the question. In 1934, that's when the United States formed the Federal Communications Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And the engineers there said, go forth and invent electronics with one condition. As long as they don't create harmful interference. And they defined harmful interference as anything that interferes with existing radio, TV, and now, of course, internet broadcasts. This definition, harmful interference, has never included biological harm at the FCC. And so that assumption that you were talking about in your intro has been with us for a good century, where people simply assume safety. And I think part of that comes because we don't usually see immediate health effects or environmental effects from exposure to lower frequencies of electrical fields. We know that higher levels of electrical energy, like from lightning or the electric chair, those can kill immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't tend to see immediate effects from lower frequency fields, such as those emitted by cell towers, cell phones, Wi-Fi, transmitting utility meters, those kinds of things, everyone's just walking around noticing that their gadgets are doing very cool things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not looking at that biological question because we don't see immediate effects.
So we actually, what we're talking about is invisible, and the usual scientific measures that people think about are biochemical, and so, you know, we can't put them under a microscope.
We can.
We can.
Mm-hmm. We can, but they're, yes, we can. And so let's just take a look at the geological situation. If we go back billions of years when, you know, this planet was just a mass of rock and dust and gases and water, we didn't have man-made laws then, we didn't have mobile phones, there was a buildup of charge, and lightning began to strike. Actually, a bombardment of lightning storms struck. And that led to nucleic and amino acids, which we now recognize as the building blocks of life. Early plants made oxygen, paving the way for animals. And all of us, plants and animals, all living creatures, we still function by electrochemical signals. Every organ in our bodies, including our brains and hearts, functions by electrochemical signals. Even at rest, all of our cells have measurable voltage. So, in other words, without electromagnetic energy, none of us would be here. That's very clear. And if we look at how, you know, okay, so what are the biological effects? What are the health effects of exposure to this stuff? One place that the FCC looked at, for one example, when people wanted to put cell phones in the marketplace, they said, okay, let's test. And they took a 200-pound mannequin, a plastic man, and filled his head with salty fluid.
With what kind of fluid?
Salty.
Okay.
And they took his temperature. And then they gave him a cell phone for 6 minutes. And then they took his temperature again. And because his temperature had not changed by 2 degrees in those 6 minutes, the FCC said, okay, this stuff is safe. Go ahead and market it.
Well, see, this is an example of how little prepared we are to look into electrical or electromagnetics as a factor or a feature in our world, because that goes back to the very question I was asking you, which is, you know, we want, that's a biochemical test. Did the temperature of the water go up?
Wait. Mm-hmm. That's a thermal test. Thermal mm-hmm. meaning temperature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was no biochemical test in that process. It was simply about temperature change.
Right. So there's then the presumption that a temperature change would be the only thing we need to know about.
Correct. And that it would be sufficient.
Right.
And
so this is so it's not only all of us that have a kind of confusion or misunderstanding or would discount or not understand why something that has an impact on electrical features of the human and other organisms would be important, but the government testing people themselves didn't even have a clear idea. In fact, they had a very confused idea of how to get a handle on and measure something like this. They didn't even know what to measure, in effect. And so I think I just want to make this point because obviously you're going to be informing us a lot more about this than most of us knew before. But it's also, you know, for listeners, it's like we don't you know, we don't know. This is kind of a blank area. And it's not only that we don't know, but, you know, the government didn't know. Nobody was kind of really prepared to evaluate.
I'm not sure I would agree with what you've just said.
Uh-huh.
Because if we take a historical look,
or they chose not to evaluate. Maybe they did know or someone knew, but they were not prepared to do an evaluation. They did a kind of inadequate evaluation, and there may be reasons for that. Is that what happened?
Well, I'm going to – let me I don't know. I mean,
okay,
I wasn't
so
there. I don't know.
All right. Well, no, you weren't there for any of this. You're recounting history that you do know.
Yes, and I think, you know – why, it's an excellent question. Why was a 6-minute test all that took place to determine that cell phones are safe? And that, I think that test was in the early mid-90s. And here we are basically 20 years later with most people having a cell phone and all of those phones requiring infrastructure, i.e. cell towers, that also emit radiation. We're in a nearly saturated environment, and all we've got basically from, you know, a government perspective is that 6-minute test. We do have thousands of other peer-reviewed scientific studies that mm-hmm. have looked at many other factors besides thermal effects, mm-hmm. and those need to be recognized by our federal agencies. They need to be, you know, counted. At this point, they aren't really recognized. Mm-hmm. What I was saying in terms of the historical perspective, because in the 60s, many people have heard that the Russians spied on the American embassy in Moscow. Mm-hmm. And they were using radio frequency fields to do that spying. And this is basically what we're surrounded by right now.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people, Americans, who were working in the Moscow embassy got very sick. A lot of them got leukemia, for one example.
Mm.
And the Russians knew that they were doing this test. That is a whole controversial thing in itself. But they did studies. And then eventually the Americans said, okay, we need to study this too. And also a lot of Americans who were working on radar with the military, I think starting in the 40s, those men were saying, we've got health problems.
What is radar? Because that, you know, is that a one kind of, you know, if you could define that so that, because, you know, I think part of it is, you know, we don't really understand these terms all that well, you know,
yes.
and what they signify. So what is radar? Does that, would we call it something different nowadays than that? Or what is radar?
It's some method for spying, you know, like a surveillance kind of.
But electromagnetically, I mean, is it an EMF? Is it one kind? You know, what is it in relation to what we're talking about here?
There, I don't think I'm qualified to answer that specifically. There's a whole spectrum of electromagnetic energy,
mm-hmm.
and then there are amplitudes that, you know, different frequency fields can be. Can use as they function. And the man-made electromagnetic energy that is used to power, say, a cell phone or Wi-Fi,
mm-hmm.
those devices operate at frequency fields and amplitudes that cannot be found in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this equipment a lot of these devices originated with military use.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, gradually they've become ubiquitous in the public. And there have been questions raised throughout the century as we've, you know, been using these. But I think people have mainly been so pleased with what the devices can do that they've said, all right, we're just going to keep enjoying the benefits that these electronic devices give us and focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, as one electrical engineer said to me, you know, we wouldn't have anything here. I mean, we wouldn't be on this radio show right now, perhaps. So,
well, that's probably very true. So what are, you know, the government just did a thermal test, as you described. But since then, and you then cited the kind of, it wasn't a test, but it was a health consequence of, you know, using this kind of radar in an embassy, and then there were health consequences, so it was kind of an unintended experiment. What kind of, you know, studies and research now showing in terms of potential health impacts, and then you know, if you can give us some sense of that, maybe we can also come to an understanding of why that would be the case, you know, why this stuff would have certain undesirable consequences.
Okay, so if we go back to this idea that every cell in our body functions by electrochemical signals, and then that we depend, for example, on the Earth's electromagnetic fields in order to, you know, feel balanced. Like a lot of times if people get sick, someone will say, well, just go walk on the beach with your feet bare. And you'll get healed.
Right.
And so that's the Earth's, you know, natural electromagnetic fields that help us to heal. And we know, for example, birds have cryptochromes, which are magnetically sensitive genes in their eyes. And they use cryptochromes to navigate and to know where home is and to locate due north.
Mm-hmm.
Radio frequency radiation signals emitted by cell towers, for example, can disrupt cryptochrome-based navigation. So there are German scientists who've been studying bee colony collapse for many years, and they say that if pesticides or GMOs or harsh winters, the varroa mite, if those things, for example, were causing harm to bee colonies, well, then we'd see weak or ill bees. But in their studies, after cell towers go live and we get bee colony collapse, the bees simply disappear. We don't have any dead bodies, dead bee bodies. So they're saying that the abandonment of hives from bees is caused by radio frequency radiation interrupting their cryptochrome-based navigation.
Mm.
So there are many, many ways that these signals affect living creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say some of the questions that scientists look at are, you know, what happens when we're exposed long-term? Long-term meaning more than 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if exposure begins in utero?
Mm-hmm.
What if a child can see a cell tower from her bedroom window? What if a utility company installs a microwave transmitting smart meter on your breaker box and you've got a medical implant? And what happens when we are exposed to multiple sources of radio frequency radiation 24/7? So all of these kinds of questions are with us now, and many scientists have been looking at them. I'll say quickly that for a wonderful source of peer-reviewed studies. If people go to bioinitiative.org, I believe there are almost 2,000 studies at bioinitiative.org. And my website also has a lot of references, electronicsilentspring.com. Certainly in the book, pretty much everything I say has a reference for it with a peer-reviewed study.
Terrific. Great. You know, what other, I mean, you just described, you know, effects upon wildlife. What about the effects on humans?
Okay. I can give a small handful of studies, what studies show. The rate of calcium efflux through a cell's membrane, this is actually very crucial. That is affected by exposure to electromagnetic energy, man-made electromagnetic energy. The brain's metabolic rate, the rate of DNA breakage, melatonin production and metabolism, these basic kinds of things are all affected. If we look at epidemiological studies, and these come primarily from Europe and Turkey and the Middle East, because American telecom companies will not give their subscribers' usage data over to epidemiologists. But, for example, in Sweden, a study found that people who begin using a digital cell phone as teenagers or younger have a 420% increased risk of brain cancer. So that's rather significant.
I would say so.
Yeah. South Korean teenagers. And in South Korea, I believe that's the country on Earth that has the most use of electronics. Their teenagers now commonly have dementia. They can't remember their own phone numbers. And their doctors think this comes from excessive screen time because they're only using one side of their brains when they're in front of a screen. In Los
which
Angeles...
Which side is that? Let's talk about that a little bit. I think that's very important. Which side of the brain are they using? I'm guessing they're using the left brain. Is that right?
Yes, but I—that would be—that's also my guess. But honestly, I don't know. But I'm assuming that it's a left brain dominant activity to look at a screen.
So it's kind of linear thinking, and then getting entrained in a certain kind of linear thinking. Is that if it is the left brain, which I think that's very likely, then. That kind of, I mean, it's the right brain that allows the body to relax, heal, and mend. It also helps us kind of get a broader stroke, 360-degree kind of perception of reality. So it would have flattening effects as well as overstimulating effects if what we both project about it is in fact the case.
Those are all good questions. We do know that just by using... something with a screen, you know, it actually, or text messaging, for example, activates the dopamine effect. And what happens is the brain says, ooh, I like that text message. Give me more. And it creates addiction. And the frequencies that are actually required for mobile devices to operate actually increase the activity of brain endorphins or endogenous opioids, and these are the base, the biological base of addiction to opium, to alcohol and morphine, and to text messaging.
So that in effect, it has both an electromagnetic impact on the cellular level, on the brain.
We would say an electrochemical.
Electrochemical. But it also has an addictive effect so that, you know, you want to keep going back for more and using it and using it and using it rather than doing it selectively, for example.
Yes. And I have read reports of toddlers, for example, who've been admitted to addiction treatment centers because they won't give up their iPads. And most of us know people who have a really hard time giving up their device. And there are so many factors involved in that. And we need, as a society, to begin to recognize, okay, this is a problem, and let's, you know, what are the steps we can take to, you know, to improve the health of this individual person and our whole society as we proceed here.
Have you looked at this from an epidemiological perspective in terms of, you know, the kinds of health impacts that the researchers who are studying this are finding? Are those ones that are showing up more on a mass level?
Well, and again, we don't have epidemiological studies in the United States in terms of cell phone use. From Europe, there are studies coming out about increased risk of brain cancer. And I'll say most of the studies that are available only look at a half hour of use per day. They do not, and that's now considered minimal use, but
sure,
when studies started happening, that was considered high level of use. I'm not aware of any study that looks at the combined effects of cell phone use and Wi-Fi and living, you know, say, a certain amount of, you know, a certain distance from a cell tower or working under a cell tower. So we don't have those kinds of studies. And we do have some studies also from Europe about proximity to cell towers and how people's sleep and general well-being and digestion, how those things are affected. I can tell a little bit of good news here. I think it's good news, although it starts out with some not good news. We have really strong increases in children presenting with autism. So as of March 2014, one in 42 boys has autism. And in 2012, this number was 1 in 54 boys. That's a pretty alarming trend. I've just reported on a pediatrician in the Bay Area. This is not in the book, but people can find the report on the website, electronicsilentspring.com. This pediatrician's protocol says, turn your Wi-Fi off at night for at least 12 hours. Unplug your cordless telephones. Actually, you know, just don't use them. Do not let the child near any wireless device, like a cell phone or an iPad. And if you can, turn the electricity off to the child's bedroom while sleeping from the breaker box. And she started offering this protocol to families. One of them was on a military base. They had a 10-year-old boy who had never uttered a word, and he screamed every night from 10 p.m. until 3 a.m. And the doctor thought, this is not going to work because he's on a military base, and she figured the radiation, the background radiation levels were so high that they're doing anything within their own home would be useless. And all they did was turn off their Wi-Fi, and I think they unplugged one or two cordless phones. Within 3 days, this boy spoke a complete sentence. She then gave him a therapeutic-grade fish oil, and the family kept reducing their emissions and their exposure to electromagnetic radiation. And within 3 weeks, this boy stopped screaming at night. He slept through the night. So there it is. and in the report on my website, you can read about other families that saw significant improvements in their family's health and, you know, certainly in the behavior, sleep, and digestion of these children with autism and ADHD. So that is good news to me because anybody can try that. You don't need autism to try this experiment. Anyone can turn their Wi-Fi off while they're sleeping and start there. You can unplug your cordless devices at least while you're sleeping and do an experiment for, you know, the doctor suggests trying it for 2 weeks and see if your sleep and digestion and, you know, other issues that are particular to you, see if they improve.
Well, that's a great suggestion. And actually, I'm sure that our listeners would like to hear, you know, more kind of the tips as, you know, about what they can do. But let's take our break here for station identification. And when we come back, we'll talk more about that as well as other facets of the kinds of devices and instrumentation that's in our world that, you know, we need to be aware of as emitting and exposing people to these possible effects. So stay with us, listeners. We'll be back. I'm Allison Rose Levy talking with Katie Singer, the author of An Electronic Silent Spring. We'll be back in just a few minutes with the second half of the show. Hello.
This is Katie.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm trying to get the engineer here. Okay, good. I thought you were going to do the music. You're going to add that later. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, I went to 5 past because we began at 4 past. So, you know, at the 30-minute, that was the 25-minute mark at the half hour. So now we're going to go through till the hour, right, for the second half. Okay? All righty. So we're not doing the music, and I'll just kind of plunge right in. Okay? All right. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. If you missed the first half of the show, you can go back and listen to it in our archives later this afternoon. Today we're talking with author Katie Singer, the author of An Electronic Silent Spring, about the dangers of living with electromagnetic radiation, its health impacts, the need for study, setting limits, and things that we can do to minimize the impact on ourselves. In the first half of the show, we talked with Katie about some of the ways this hasn't been kind of adequately studied, but what some international scientific studies are finding and how that can connect to some possible health concerns that are showing up for us that, you know, that as well as for other species. And you can also go to Katie's website and read more and find out more. Her website is electronicsilentspring.com. She updates it and blogs there. You can learn more about the book, purchase the book, as well as read some of the reports and other things that she's referencing on the program. If you're just joining us, again, you can go listen to the first half of the show later today in the archives. And if you have listened to the first half of the show and are enjoying it, please do like us on iTunes and let your friends and colleagues and family know about the program, the people that you think would enjoy it. As we went into our station break at the last half hour, Katie was recounting an amazing story of a very rapid, really groundbreaking kind of recovery of a child with autism who, when shielded from electronics and electromagnetic fields through unplugging various instruments and turning things off during his sleeping hours, was actually able to, having never spoken before, to access speech for the first time. So, I mean, the resilience of the human being and the ability to kind of bounce back, though not always the case because we're barraged with so many things, is certainly terrific and inspiring to hear about. Let's just, you know, take a tour down the lane of what the average person can do to, if they choose to minimize their exposure and use of these instruments. I'd love to hear, you know, some of your, you know, what are the things that are that any of us could do to protect ourselves individually, and then we'll go on to talk about what we should be doing or could be doing as a society.
I'm going to start with pregnant women and babies, and because, you know, we're all concerned about exposure in utero. And the best resource there, if people go to babysafeproject.org, there is a 7-minute video featuring the head of Yale Medical School's OBGYN department, and he explains why pregnant women, in his opinion, should not get near cell phones or Wi-Fi. So babysafeproject.org, and that's, you know, 7 minutes of really good education. And then another thing I like to recommend is that people not use mobile devices inside of cars or trains or buses. When you do that, when you're in a moving vehicle, at every mile, the phone disconnects from one cell tower and reconnects to a new one at every mile. Mm-hmm. And in that process, the phone goes to maximum power in order to receive the signal. Also, you're in a metal box, and so the signals have to work harder in order to penetrate the metal. All of that radiation that the device emits in order to operate is trapped inside the metal box, and it bounces around, and you're there in the metal box with your device. So don't use a phone or an iPad or anything like that inside of a moving vehicle, like a car, a train, an elevator, a bus.
What about these devices that tell you, you know, where to drive and everything that people have become more and more dependent on?
GPSs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've heard different things about them. So I don't have a clear answer for that at the moment, but I would say that's a really good question. There's new technology that's coming all along. Another concern is for people with medical implants. 10% of our population has some kind of medical implant, like a cardiac pacemaker, an insulin pump, or a deep brain stimulator for Parkinson's. And if a person, say, with a deep brain stimulator gets into a Prius, then when the And those cars have about 8 computers. Most new cars have about that many computers in order to operate, which are all emitting signals. But let's stick with the Prius.
Is a Prius more so than other cars?
I think it used to be, but I'm now hearing that the newer cars are not much better. But let me explain what happens in a Prius. Mm-hmm. While the car brakes, the computers basically work to recharge the car's battery in the braking process, and they emit magnetic fields that shut off the Prius at every stopping sign or stopping light in that process. And so that could be life-threatening for a lot of people who have deep brain stimulators or who are in traffic with someone who's got one.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, again, we're coming back to that old term, harmful interference, and in this case, we've got one electronic device, namely the deep brain stimulator that's implanted in a person's brain, interfering or receiving interference from other electronic devices, namely the computers that make the car operate. And we haven't looked well, we haven't looked thoroughly at how this affects biological creatures. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, it's time to, number one, recognize that we've got a problem here. And two, we need to educate ourselves. Those are the crucial first steps. And then individuals can take steps, as I was suggesting before, turning your Wi-Fi off at night while you sleep. Like, learn how to do that immediately. And then quit the cordless phones. I get corded landline phones at my thrift shop for about $1. You want to keep your landline. And the wireless utility meters are a major hazard because most homes will have three of them for electric, water, and gas. And there I'm going to recommend a film. It's called Take Back Your Power. That gives a lot of information about wireless utility meters, and you want to find out in your local area what your options are and, you know, connect with other people who are active in protecting themselves from these devices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's terrific. Terrific advice. I think for many people this will be really, you know, this could be one of the first times they're ever hearing about this. And because it's everywhere, it does seem daunting. I want to just take a pause here in the middle of our program we're not going to be silent or anything like that in the pause, but to just honor and express gratitude to a great woman, independent scientist, who has passed away in the last day. I just received notification of this as we are on the air. Her name is C.O. Colburn, she just passed away, and she really... You know, a lot of what's happening with all of these different kinds of technological innovations in our world is that many of them convey downside risks that we haven't studied enough. And Dr. Colburn really was on the leading edge of studying and gaining information and doing independent science.
Her
on
book was
chemicals and the chemicals in fracking, which I've reported on a great deal on this program. And in fact, she was on this program as well. So if without her, because those things have been secret and they've been understudied and unreported, just like the area we're talking about today, we wouldn't know a lot of what we do know. And I just want to, you know, honor her contribution and honor all of the people who both do the science and also who bring the science to our attention, you know, because there's always this call, well, where's the science? But we need to do the science. And she, you know, and that's not regularly done in many instances where it kind of points out something about a technology that we need or use or think we need. And so she was really, you know, was a giant in that. And so
her book, Our Stolen Future, was definitely, it affected me a lot. It was called the first sequel to Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. And she wrote a lot about how reproduction is affected by chemicals in our world. And mm-hmm. I could segue there and say that fertility is also affected by exposure to electromagnetic radiation. One of the things that that gets a lot of attention is that men who have erectile dysfunction are 2.6 times more likely to carry their phone in their front pants pocket. So that's, you know, what I say is it's not a great birth control method. We all want men to take more responsibility for birth control, and that's not, you know, the way to go with it. There are lots of ways that fertility is affected by exposure. Sperm motility and numbers are affected. We have lots of studies showing that from men keeping phones in their pants pocket. And I'm going to recommend again that people check out babysafeproject.org just to alert the pregnant women in their lives that they don't want to be exposed to cell phones or Wi-Fi, you know, while they're pregnant and while their children are young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, if it isn't, I mean, obviously the younger the person, the being, the baby, the more vulnerable, but the same effects, you know, are can impact any of us, though we are, you know, bigger and we're not growing, except maybe overweight or something like that. We're not developmentally evolving. So it's always true that those windows, those developmental windows, are more critical. And, you know, so what would you propose that are the kinds of initiatives that people should support and try to get policies altered potentially around some of this?
Yeah, that's the gazillion-dollar question because there are so many things that need attention. Before he left office, Representative Dennis Kucinich proposed the Cell Phone Right to Know Act, and this is still available. That would be really great. It would basically give the EPA funding in order to do its job and regulate this stuff and track it. In July of 2014, FCC Chair Tom Wheeler dedicated $2 billion to installing Wi-Fi in schools around the country, and lots of school systems are now issuing iPads to every child. Again, people need to get informed and mobilize so that, you know, we put a stop to this because our children's health and minds are at risk, and this technology has not yet been proven harmless. You can work with others in your community to get out of smart meters. We all want a more energy-efficient grid, but it doesn't have to be delivered wirelessly. It's also important for people to know that wireless technologies use much more energy than wired technologies. And, you know, here we are with the new commitment from the UN climate change talks in Peru, where nations must reduce their energy use. And it's very obvious to me that reducing energy use includes reducing use of electronics. So, yeah, that's... One of the startling statistics there is that if data centers were a country, data centers are the places where data is stored for websites.
Mm-hmm.
If data centers were a country, they would rank fifth in use of energy.
Wow, that's really something.
It's quite startling. They require the equivalent of 30 nuclear power plants to operate.
Hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really something.
And that
let me just, let me just ask you, because we're kind of coming in to the last, you know, minutes of the show. You know, we have about 3 or 4 minutes left. And, you know, how do people take to this message? Because, you know, you're striking, you know, a stake into the heart of a major addiction, professional, a lot of people, you know, really, I was just at an event, an anti-fracking event over the weekend, and somebody was telling me, you know, the internet is our savior, this is how we're going to organize. I'm not saying, and I think there is that feature to the internet, so I'm not just ridiculing that by any means. I think it presents an opportunity that we've, you know, lacked in terms of getting people aware. I mean, this program is coming to us via the internet and everything. But, how are people responding to, you know, this dilemma, really, because it is a dilemma?
because there are so many ways in which troubles in our world require people to kind of get together, and at its best,
that's what the internet is providing.
Let
me be very clear. I'm not saying no to the internet. I'm saying no to wireless use of the internet. So it does mean getting wired, getting cabled, corded access to the internet, going back to corded telephones. The wireless part is what I'm talking about. That's what we don't know how to deliver safely. And so I'm not saying quit the internet. I am saying quit the wireless part of it. And how do people respond? Well, you know, when people care about their health, and many people do, if they get an irritation, like they can't sleep, or they get a headache that won't quit, or they get a tumor, or they get diabetes, or something else, or, you know, they welcome a child into their lives. When people are faced with health concerns, then they step up their questioning about what they can do to improve their health and keep their environment as healthy as possible. And so those people are interested to say, okay, I'm going to try one thing. Like, I'll try turning the Wi-Fi off for a couple of weeks and seeing if my sleep improves. It's, you know, if people are fine, they don't notice a problem, then they don't notice a problem.
Yeah, I mean, but I think what tends to happen is that nobody knows the problem until they have a problem.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's just kind of the way it is in terms of, or, you know, and of course there are a minority of people who really think these things through and are, you know, concerned about and thinking about all of these different things. I, having reported on health for so many years and promoted healthy actions and healthy self-care and healthy social policy and all the rest of it, I'm in, you know, regular conversation with people who, you know, my circle is filled with people who think as I do and are looking at all of these things. But I know that that it's really kind of tough. And what tends to happen is that you don't look at it until you have the problem. And then it's kind of late to do something about it. So my specific question to you is, you know, what do you encounter when you bring this message to people? Like, you know, are you mostly bringing it to people who are already having a problem and are kind of going, oh my gosh, fantastic. We can do something about this, like what you described, that wonderful story. Or, you know, do you bring it to people who are kind of like, well, I can't give up my, you know, whatever it is, device, my this, my that. You know, what are you hearing as you tour?
I get all of the above and in between. So it's, you know, every person is different and in a different situation, and, you know, they have different possibilities for how they can reduce their use. And you know, I certainly know plenty of people who say, I'm going to die somehow. I don't care how it is. And and then I might come in and say, you can, you know, that would be your choice, and it's important to remember that you're using a cell phone requires infrastructure that does affect every living creature. So it, for me, the issue is pretty complicated, and we are all related. We do all affect each other, and using wireless devices affects our ecosystem.
Well, thank you, Katie Singer, for opening up this whole area for us here on Connect the Dots, and thank you for the work you do. And listeners, please do go out and find An Electronic Silent Spring, terrific book. You can also go to Katie's website by of the same name, Electronic Silent Spring. Inform yourselves. Make an informed decision. You know, don't just shrug this off, and especially those who are
you know, starting a family, have young children, you know, do take it more seriously. Thank you so much for being with me today, Katie, on Connect the Dots, and good luck with all the terrific work you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for your openness, your seeking of new information, your dedication to health. And come back with us next week for the next edition of Connect the Dots. We're here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy.
Oh, my way.